This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to step up to the plate with two birds on a bat with Jim, Steve, and Fish.
A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
Andre Lottis! Into left field! Hit number 3,000! A run is scored!
Smith corks one into right down the line! It may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Cardinals are! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team. What a ride. The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Two Birds on a Bat, your St. Louis Cardinal fans podcast. I'm one third of your team, Jimbo. I'd like to welcome in the other two guys that put their Cardinal red on every week and come in here and give you their take on our beloved Cardinal. Steve-O, welcome in, bud.
Hey, what's happening, Jimmy, man? It's a great week to be in here. I tell you what, still chills after that intro.
I know, I can't.
I'm getting more feedback on that.
Yeah.
Than anything. Fish?
Everybody really likes it. Fish, welcome to the show. How you doing, bud?
Well, I'm happy to be here. I'd have been a little bit happier if the Cardinals would have won last night, but I'm still happy to be here.
Well, it's interesting to hear that last take in the, like Steve said, the intro. I mean, great job by producer Brian. He put that together. Some of the more amazing moments in Cardinal history, which, you know, we're just trying to pay tribute to our favorite franchise. But to hear Buck say, you know, what a team, what a ride. When he says, what a ride, the only thing I could think about on the intro was, this is a bumpy ride right now. I mean, we've got to start taking care of business, or guys, we're in trouble.
The most frustrating thing is you have to beat the teams that you that you should beat. And that's the biggest issue I have, is all of a sudden you get these teams and they're just not laying down for us, but all of a sudden, man, they're... You know, they come up, they put 12 runs on us last night, the Brewers. I mean, I can't fathom how you think you're going to maybe be a championship-caliber team and you can't put away these guys. Cincinnati, same thing. Cincinnati took 2 of 3 from us over the weekend.
Hey, it wasn't just like they hit a bunch of bombs or something to score 12 runs. They had 17 hits. Here's the problem. We love the Cardinals. They have to get better pitching. They have to. If they're going to make a serious run at this, and there's no doubt, I don't care that they're half a game back in wild card right now, they're in a great spot to make a serious run at this. They got to get some things together. They got to play better defense. They got to do some situational hitting better, and they got to get better pitching, and it would be nice to see them win at home.
Well, what's interesting is you bring up the point of they're in a great spot. Now, some people would say, well, they're really not, Fish, because they've got the toughest schedule remaining. I actually am on board with your statement of they're in a great spot, and here's why. I believe that there's something to this wild card thing about teams fighting for their lives to get in these things, and then they play good baseball. There is no doubt that if you look at the three teams that we feel are realistically in this, which is the Mets, the Cardinals, and the Giants. Okay, if you look at this, and of course, if the Giants were to overtake the Dodgers replace that. Either way, those teams, there's no doubt, are the ones that are knee-deep in this. I think the Pirates are out. That's just my opinion. If you look at those three teams, the Cardinals are going to have to play great baseball. Okay, to do this, which then I think gets them rolling into the playoffs. That's why I'm on board with your statement of they're in a great spot. Some people, though, would disagree and say they're not in a great spot. They are playing winning teams from here on out. The Mets have the easiest road for sure.
Well, that's the playoff race part of it. You know, it's a race. And if you remember watching, you know, ball when we were growing up in those specials, This Week in Baseball and everything, it was the pennant chase. Right? It was down to the last week of baseball with two teams. Now all of a sudden, you got three or four, maybe even five teams that are going all the way down to the last couple of weeks. And it's a playoff game every night. I mean, it's an emotional roller coaster for us as fans sitting there watching a game. And all of a sudden, somebody puts a 12 spot on you, and you're like, what in the hell just happened here? We have got to win these games.
That's the sixth time this year that they've given up 10 runs at home this year.
Man, I just, for a team that, you know, we pride ourselves on being great Cardinal fans, and we do, we feel like we're part of it, right? Like, the, you know, the fact that we're there every game and that we root so hard and that we love them, we feel like we're part of it, right? Man, that's, it's rough right now.
And you know, Jimmy, that was the first statement you made earlier about who they're playing, matchups, record-wise, all that. I guess I don't look at that hard enough, because the Cardinals are certain, as these other teams, Pittsburgh, the Giants, Miami, whoever, they're in a position now, hey, it doesn't matter who you're playing. You could be playing the 1927 Yankees. The bottom line is you have to win now.
For sure.
So I don't care if you're playing the good teams, the bad teams. And if you look at the Cubs down the stretch, I'll bet you their record won't be as quite as good as it was earlier. I won't say they're coasting. It's different. But you got to win. So I say they're in a great spot because they're only half a game out. And honestly, I don't know that this is a team looking at it now. I thought different at the beginning of the year. Looking at it now, that I'm saying is a real legit playoff team. So you got to love the fact that they got a chance at all.
Well, you bring up the pitching, so let's look at it. You're not getting – I mean, okay, you went into the year and you think, well, we got Waino. Okay, and I agree. You've brought up on the show more than once that if there's one guy on the staff that you're going to give a chance to figure it out, it's Waino. And he's shown signs that, like, maybe we're going to get it going here, but maybe not. So, you know – I don't know how comfortable either of you guys are right now. I tend to agree with Fish. I'm going to give Waino the benefit of the doubt. I think Martinez has been all that in a bag of chips. After that, I mean, are we sure what we're getting from anybody?
No, I mean, you hate to look at it, but this is the first time that Jaime's gone this deep in the season, right? Usually he's on the shelf by now, or he's just coming back from being on the shelf for the last 3 months. So, I mean, but his performances, we're just not getting the type of pitching that we need out of him. And he's that guy. He's a shutdown type of guy, too. He has great stuff, and he can knock them down.
Oh, he certainly has great stuff, but he don't seem to get it done. And that thing about this late in the season, that's all true, but you got to lay that to bed, man. There's no time to think about that. Look, these are big boy games. You got to come and play and perform, and if you don't, you're out.
Well, that, you know, this is what makes, you know, being a baseball fan awesome, you know, playoff races, chases. This is the history that we have here. I mean, we do feel like we're in it every year, it seems like. I mean, obviously, I know there's been lean years and things like that, but the way the run's been the last however many years, you know, obviously it started with La Russa. I think we as Cardinal fans expect to be in the hunt every year, and we are in the hunt, although, I mean, it feels a little different. I will say that. But if you're enjoying this run and you're, you know, you like to talk about it, and that's really what this show's for. Remember, we are Two Birds on a Bat. We do this podcast twice a week. We do it for you. We are just three everyday fans. Not a one of us. Well, I won't take that back. You were a pretty good player, Steve. Not a one of us think we're big league players, except for maybe Steve. But, you know, we're just fans, just like you. We try to give a fan perspective, but we also want to hear yours. So if you want to check out our Two Birds on a Bat show, for sure, you know, we're going to keep sharing this. Our stuff should be done here real soon. We're kind of running this through the Bleacher Bums podcast site. But we are on Twitter, at Two Birds on a Bat show. If you want to connect with us, we'd love to connect with you through there as well. Really good stuff. And, you know, it's just been a great start to the show. No doubt Brian's intro has really, I think, put us into first-class territory.
Absolutely. And it's funny you should mention the run that the Cardinals are on for the past 20 years, because one of my other podcasts, is we've talked about, I'm a huge Dallas Cowboy fan as well, and I got a Cowboys podcast going on. Fish, you will not be a guest on that show. I mean, we got a lot of shows out there, lineupmedia.fm. You can check them all out. But the Dallas Cowboys are in a 20-year drought from doing anything good. So I have the epitome of what's going on with from one angle to the next. One team struggled for the last 20 years, and one team's been on a mountain for the last 20 years. What do they call it? One's been in the penthouse, the other's been in the outhouse.
Don't forget that my favorite thing to tell your buddy Jono that does your show with you, because I love to get on him around here, is that the Rams have more playoff wins in the last 20 years than the Dallas Cowboys. How's that feel for you?
That's tough to swallow. Hey, I think, though, Steve-O, what you were saying there is why I got that feeling about the Cardinals and thinking that they're almost lucky to be in it at all, because I've been so blessed to be a Cardinal fan in the last really 30 years. Really, everything but the 70s. The 80s were good. So, you know, I look at that differently. Like, you know how many guys out there that are fans and, in all kind of different cities that would be chomping at the bit right now, saying excited, saying, man, my team's there. My team's got a chance. Little 13-year-old boys like my own son saying, man, my team's got a chance to do this, getting all excited, which is what we love. But my view's jaded because I've had got to see so much success from these guys that if they're not top-notch, I'm a little like, eh, whatever. I don't think they're as good.
Well, we've talked about And I think you don't shy away from it. We're spoiled, you know.
We are spoiled, but I will tell you the one thing that is super cool about St. Louis and the fans that we have here is when you turn on the TV every night or you go down the stadium, it's packed. They still bring in the crowds even after 20 years of success, and that's probably the most exciting thing. And now that the looks like the weather broke here in St. Louis, we're going to have some nice nights where it's not 99 in the stadium and no air movement. You're going to be hard to find a ticket if we make a decent run here.
I will give it to Cardinal fan this summer. I got to tell you, there were a few games where I'm telling you, when you walked out the door, you felt like your face was melting. And I'd turn the Cardinal game on, and that place would be packed. I remember sitting there going, there is no place I'd rather not be than at Busch Stadium today. But then I think about it and think, if my buddy would have called me and said, hey, I got two really good seats, I'd have been there.
See, I don't ever get seats. You get that opportunity. I get to sit in the house in the underwear and watch the game on TV. So there you go. But
sit in the underwear?
Yeah.
Does that go on at your house?
Well,
there are a lot of sitting around in underwear at your house.
If you knew how many pants, not from anyone else but me, if you knew how many pairs of pants I have that don't fit no more, everything I have is elastic. No more zippers, no more buttons. Elastic.
Everything stretching?
You know, Fish's motto on life, if they could put everything on a tortilla, he would be happy, you know?
I think I have put everything on a tortilla. And when it comes to eating, I am happy.
Well, I will say this. They are set up to try to take this weekend and turn this thing around. Although I don't write off any team, they're all major league players. The Brewers are obviously out of this thing. Although I do think there's something to be said for some of these clubs that get beat up a little bit when they have the opportunity at the end of the year to stick it to somebody in their division. I think they do play a little bit. And like I said, I think at any time these guys they're all big leaguers. You know, sometimes too, and I believe this, these young guys that get called up in September, hey, this is my opportunity. I'm going to go out there and do everything I can to show that I belong here. So sometimes you get somebody's best game, even if they're sitting in the cellar. I think we are seeing that a little bit. I mean, this cat playing center field for the Brewers, how fast is this guy? I mean, this Buxton and then Santana and, Ryan Braun, it seems like. If there's one guy in baseball I hate, it's Ryan Braun. I just despise him as a human being. Okay, not even the PED thing.
Just his whole demeanor, the way he carries himself.
He deserves a horrible death, and not because he did PEDs. He deserves a horrible death because he did it, and he tried to get out of it by blaming another human being and try to cost that guy his job, his livelihood. This clown makes $15-20 million a year, and he tried to get a FedEx guy fired. I got no use for him. If he was burning on fire, I wouldn't piss on him. I hope he leaves here with a broken leg.
Woo!
Yeah, wow.
Sorry.
This just took a different turn there, didn't
Sorry.
It?
Hey, man, we got like Sorry. Voodoo dolls out.
I don't like him.
Get that pin out of that thing, man.
I don't like him. And you know what I do believe? You know what I believe? If this was 30 years ago, well, it'd be 40 years ago, Bob Gibson would drill him. So I've had enough of you poking balls in the right field. He'd drill him. Just because he doesn't like him. We don't have that on this team.
What did we talk about the other day? Just... Are we sick and tired of the Cardinals getting drilled by every
That's
team,
right.
but we let the Brewers go out there and get 17 hits?
Where's Chris Carpenter when you need him?
Well,
we don't have him. We talked about that.
We don't have him on this team. We don't. And
that's an interesting point because I want to jump here and say, this team, that's another thing. It does not seem like it's got that bulldog mentality that some of the past teams have. Even if they're not as good at this or that pitching defense, they don't have that same – I don't see it. And I love these guys. I just don't see it.
It's like they're almost – and I don't even know how to phrase this – almost apologetic for being in the mix right now. Just a ho-hum, we're going to go out there and just do it, the Mr. Nice Guy way. We're the clean-cut Cardinals. And I sure do like that bulldog mentality. And I don't know if they got somebody that they're calling up here
is
in
that
September.
Some manager stuff? Because Matheny is pretty well out there with wanting to do the right things, whether it be baseball or life. And he wants to go about things doing them the way they should be done. And we see that. La Russa, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this probably, but he's a little bit more slimy.
This is
he would hit guys and then deny it.
But why is that slimy?
It's the wussification of America.
It's not slimy.
Wait a minute. I say that in a positive way because I loved it. But I said slimy because La Russa would have someone hit someone then always say that he didn't call that.
I loved it.
Well, that's that unwritten.
I did too.
Yeah.
But no. If I was the manager, I would say, yeah, he hit him and I encouraged it.
And then you'd be fine and suspended all the time. Then that happens. Is that what you want to be?
Well, I don't know what I want to be. Just happy to be here.
Listen
to some of these podcasts, which I love.
It is one of those things where you almost see it. I mean, they're a microcosm of society. It's, you know, oh, we're going to take the high road and we're not, you know, we're not going to retaliate. And listen, there's no place for that in baseball. It's time to get after it. And you have to have somebody that's going to go out there and lay down the law in order to have that respect.
Well, who's the go-to guy on this team? You can go right through the lineup, right? Matt Carpenter is a fiery guy. I don't think we see it enough from him. Maybe he doesn't want that role, but you know what? If I'm the manager, I'm calling him in an office saying, I don't know if you want the role or not, but you need to take it. Because once you get past him, I mean, Stephen Piscotty, God love him, this guy looks like a Canadian Mountie. He looks like Dudley Do-Right.
Well, let me jump in here and say this, too. I think it doesn't have to, but I think it really needs to come from a pitcher. Because I think Matt Carpenter's got some bulldog mentality. I think he wants to win. I think he plays hard. I think he goes about it right. Having said that, he can't have the same impact as far as hitting guys, throwing inside, saying, hey, we've created this space. We're taking the space. The space is ours. Right. He can't really do that.
Well, so then who is it?
It almost needs to be a pitcher.
We don't have him.
Well, if you look at it, Martinez could be that guy, except for he wants to be the clown show at the end of the dugout throwing water on the guys, which is all fine and dandy having fun, but there's a time and place for fun. You hit 25 home runs in consecutive games, right? Every game you're hitting bomb or two bombs or whatever it is, have a little bit of fun, but they start plunking your guys, and now we have injuries. How many guys are out on the DL because of getting hit by an inside fastball, okay? And how many have we put on the DL? What was our old line from the Untouchables?
Well, they send one of yours to the hospital, you send two of theirs to the morgue. I mean, that's how it should be, right?
Exactly. Now, can Martinez be that guy and flip the switch? Because let me tell you what, 98 in a rib cage, 97 in the middle of the numbers in the back, send a message. Would you like to see the new Reyes kid come out and do it?
They've got multiple guys on the team that can throw 98 in the ribs. The question is, are they man enough to do it? And, again, there is no doubt the one thing that Fish has brought up on this show that is 100% accurate without him saying it out loud is all them years when our guys were getting hit and then we would retaliate, it was coming from the manager, no doubt. Because the only thing that's changed is the manager.
I'm glad you pointed that out, too, because everything I say in the show is not 100% accurate.
Well, for sure.
I often say stuff that I just say because
You made it up. You made it up.
Oh, all the time.
But you could not be any more right about the La Russa thing and the impact that the impact he had on the team and the persona that took on because of how he managed. Listen, the reality of it is we as fans see what? We see what goes on during a game. What we don't see is what goes on in that clubhouse during the day, the meetings, the phone calls, guys, if you've ever been in a dugout, if you've ever been part of a team, it is not puppy dogs, rainbows, and butterflies. There is bad shit that goes on in the clubhouse. There are hurt feelings. There is living with guys. There is loving guys. There is hating guys. And there is a right way to go about doing it. And the reality of it is the right way is the manager's way, whether it's wrong or right. You are going to take on the persona of your manager.
See, and that's what made La Russa in my mind great, because I'm telling you now, and I've always said this, I did not, do not, like La Russa's game day management
Either
decisions.
Did I. I'm with you.
I think, like Mitch Williams once said, a 10-year-old could do this. I feel like I could go out there and say when we should bunt, when we should run, when we should steal, when we should intentionally walk. What he did do, though, is he always had his guys prepared to play. And if you didn't jump on his ship, he got rid of you, whether it was Ozzie Smith, Ray Langford, whoever. Scott Rowland was a real good one. He got rid of you. So he molded the team in the manner that he wanted it. He had them prepared to play, ready to go. And as you said about pitchers hitting guys, if you weren't willing to do that, you may or may not be around long. He wanted those guys. He wanted guys to play the way he – and I love that side of him. Game day management, not so big, but love that side of him, man.
Is the Scott Rowland time in St. Louis – the best example of how, if you're not going to do it my way, I don't care who you are, you're out. I mean, Scott Rolen was a good player. I mean, we did lose some of when we needed him the most. A lot of times there were some injury issues. Maybe that was part of the issue. Maybe La Russa thought, you know what, bud, everybody hurts. You need to get out of here and play or whatever. Who knows? I'm not even going to try to guess what it was. I can't even think. But you know what? Rolen had kind of that quiet, small town boy thing going on that may not have jived with La Russa. La Russa thrived on guys like Chris Carpenter. I mean, he loved that. I mean, he wanted that guy.
Everybody wanted Chris Carpenter.
Jimmy Edmonds. I mean, Poole. I mean, these guys. I mean, La Russa loved these guys, and he just didn't love Rolen. No matter you can argue about it all you want. The facts are he didn't love him.
This is probably not the right terminology here, but I think Rolen was a little bit of a baby about some of that stuff too. He wore it in his sleeve. He went public with a little bit of it, even though he's a quiet guy. I wasn't a huge Rolen fan. I mean, I liked him. He's a Cardinal. He was a great player, but you know, when he left, I wasn't that unexcited.
Boy, that was a great year, though, man. When you had the MV3s going,
yeah.
Could you beat that?
No, I'm good with it. I thought when they were rolling, I thought it's a perfect situation for Rolen because, you know, Rolen doesn't want to. He was that guy that didn't want to be the guy.
Correct.
He thrived on being just part of the team. Let me do my thing
in the background.
Yeah, and what did he do? He played phenomenal defense. Okay, he was streaky with his hitting, which used to drive us nuts as fans, because I think when a guy has that much talent and that much ability, and he does, and you get used to an Albert that does it, it seems like on cue every day, and a guy that you see that can do it and doesn't do it, you get frustrated. Jimmy Edmonds was pretty automatic for a while too, but even when he started that roller coaster stuff, you'd start hearing the boo birds come out a little bit.
Hey, think of this, yeah. Cardinal. You don't have to go no further than say J.D. Drew.
Well,
he got treated unfairly. This guy was a good player, but coming in, he was the next Mickey Mantle, the five-tool guy, could do all these wonderful things. And then when he didn't become Mickey Mantle, he was a bum. You know, he went on to be a good player. He was a good little player, but he wasn't the next Mickey Mantle. So when you have it, everybody got on him. J.D. Drew didn't play hard. I don't think that's true, but we all said it.
One of my least favorite Cardinals is J.D. Drew, for sure. I didn't like him. Then again, I liked Greg Jeffries.
Because you didn't think he played hard enough, did you?
No,
see,
I didn't.
I don't know if that's true. Some guys make things look easy where it looks like they're not playing hard.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you. I read a lot. Listen, I'm going to tell you. People ask me all the time about my own son. Is he a good baseball player? You know what I tell him? This is my older boy. I've said this, and Steve, you can attest to this. Is he a good hitter? And I say, no. And they say, what do you mean he's not a good hitter? And I said, he's taken every 3-1 fastball he's ever gotten in his life. I think he's scared. J.D. Drew bunted in situations with two outs. Be a man. Get up there and play. He was the biggest puss I've ever seen play the game of baseball. He was a puss. I couldn't stand him. And here's another thing, too. Five-tool my ass. He couldn't throw it worth a piss.
Well, I mean, that's what they said. It stretches my memory to how good his arm was.
Terrible.
Hey, so we got a guest coming up that might be able to give a little insight into that.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that. We do have a special guest coming on the show today for our This Week in Cardinal.
But the deal is, I think JD just made it look super easy. So the common fan.
He didn't make nothing here look super easy. It was always a pain in the ass. Listen, you guys are going to fire me up. He is my least favorite Cardinal of all time. The only guy I can assure you that would have supplanted him in that role would have been if the Cardinals would have gotten unlucky and Hayward would have took their deal. Because I can tell you, it would have been a Jason Hayward railroad show on here every Monday and Friday. He is also another one that I can't.
So would you ever have J.D. Drew or Braun? Because you wanted to kill one of them a while ago.
Well, J.D. Drew, unlike Braun, didn't try to ruin another human being's life to save his own ass.
Sorry,
J.D. Drew, I would piss on him if he was on fire. I will not piss on Ryan Braun if he's on fire.
Wow.
Sorry.
I'm sorry I brought that back up.
Fish, one of the challenges me and you might have is we got to figure out if there's somebody that Cromer hates more than J.D. Drew from a Cardinal standpoint.
I'm going to tell you, he's one of my least all-time.
He's left the door open by saying one of my least.
Okay.
But he's made it pretty clear on the other side that He don't like him.
Fan poll? Do we do a fan poll? Facebook fan poll on
least favorite Cardinal of all time?
Yeah, you know, there's been others.
Let's put it in the generation, not of all time. I don't want somebody coming out with Hector Luna.
Well, listen. If you do a poll on Twitter, okay. So hang on. Let's talk about this. So if you do a Twitter, if you do a poll on Twitter, you can have four guys.
Okay.
All right. So we're gonna put JD Drew on there.
Yep.
Okay. Who else?
Kobe Rasmus.
Kobe. Who?
Good point. Kobe Rasmus. Who else you got? I can think of one from the '80s.
Of unlikable Cardinals. You're
I can
saying?
Think of one from the '80s. Remember when we got Neil Allen? And he was terrible. Everybody wanted to kill Neil
Allen. Yeah, but the problem there again, it's the expectations, because it wasn't that Neil Allen was terrible, but we give up Keith Hernandez to get him.
Right. No, I
mean, that was a big deal.
No, I agree. I agree. Hey, does this say a lot about our franchise that we're having a hard time coming up with four guys that we think the general public would despise? Wait a minute. I'm going to put Jason Hayward on here.
Real? No, Hayward, he won't get any votes.
Because he wasn't terrible for the Cardinals.
He wasn't terrible.
Yes, and we didn't sign that ridiculous contract.
I think you could put Scott Rolen on there. Okay. I really do.
Okay.
I might be wrong on that.
I think you are wrong on that, but we'll put him down as a maybe. Come on, we need two names. Come on, we can't come up with two guys that we think Cardinal Nation's going to be like, oh, boy. What a terrible, terrible deal that is.
Again, my memory's not good. Royce Clayton, because he took over for your man Ozzie.
Wait a minute. Hang on. I think I got a better one, and this is really a shame. This is a shame. Our own Jason Isringhausen. They booed this guy every chance they got.
Yeah, but he's not going to be in there as far as a hated guy.
Were you surprised at that, though? That this all this guy did was save 300 games. That's all he did. But, man, one game where he walks a couple of guys and makes it interesting. And I think maybe we're a little shorter with closers anyway, but...
Local kid, St. Louis Cardinal guy, he did not receive the love that many other Cardinals have. I'll give you that. I don't think he's going to make it on your hated list, but he didn't receive the love that many other Cardinals did.
Well, listen, I get it. You know, he would make it interesting or this and that. But, again, all the guy did was save 300 games for us. I mean, that's a lot of games.
I find it hard to believe that anybody is going to put him on a hated list. Maybe a frustrated list at times.
No, good. I'm glad because I don't want him to be on there.
I mean, this guy walked down the street, signed autographs for hours, whereas I don't think JD and Colby would get a whole lot of love walking around here.
Well, I'm telling you that in without question.
This goes back a little. What about Juan Augusto? Remember him?
Yeah.
I must go.
Yeah, he was
the lefty.
Would we put Templeton on here over one incident?
Well, he was a bit of an enigma, too. It wasn't just really one incident.
He was a good player.
Oh, a great player.
He was a good player.
You know, and he had great range, a great arm. Now, he would kick 40 or 45 a year that were right to him, but he made some great plays.
Well, here, I'm going to give you a name that'll surprise you. Albert Pujols. Are fans still so upset with him for leaving that he would make this list?
No.
I didn't ask you if he'd win. I bet you he'd get votes.
I don't think he'd get votes.
You don't think he'd get one vote?
I don't think
there's not
votes.
One disgruntled guy out there that's going to still tell you he lied to us.
Nah, we got his best 11 years. That's a pretty good deal. Now, I get it.
No. Great deal.
The way he went was bad, I guess, the way the fans see it. I thought it was a good deal on both ends. Albert should have took the money, the longer contract. I got no problem with it. I think the Cardinals didn't break the bank. I think they did the right thing. But to say you didn't love Albert, I I'm old and fat, I'd meet you in the alley over that one. Come on. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear people saying they didn't love Albert. You know how soon we forget? Come on. This guy did way too much.
Well, I would hope, but again, what is the category really all about, right? I mean, what we're asking here at the end of the day is, you know, your most hated Cardinal player.
Okay. How about this as a qualification?
Okay.
If they were a cheap free agent, would you bring them back and put the birds on the bat on them?
I got it. I just come up with another.
See, the one guy on that list that, based on what you just said, would not be back would be JD Drew.
Exactly.
There's nobody bringing him back.
Okay, so here I got a third one for sure. Tino Martinez. We forget about Tino Martinez.
Well, throw in Andres Galarraga. I mean, you talk about...
No, people liked him, though.
But yeah, I loved him.
That's the big cat.
I loved him.
That wasn't his fault.
But here's the deal.
He played well in St. Louis.
Yeah, he got hit by a pitch. Right.
Broke his arm.
He was doing well.
Yeah, was it opening day, maybe?
No, it wasn't opening day. He was doing... No, it was early, though. Right?
I think he got his arm whacked on opening day.
There was a streak of first basemen in there. I think what you got, Pedro Guerrero.
You got Andres Galarraga.
You got all these guys that would come into St. Louis for opposing teams, and they would hit 790 against us. And then all of a sudden they come out to be a free agent, or we get them in a trade. They come here and they hit .190. That was probably the most frustrating thing with those guys. I mean, the cat.
I think Pedro played well in St. Louis.
Yeah, Pedro Guerrero was our best hitter when we were.
I mean, he hit 30 home runs one year, and he hit like Jack Clark, old Busch Stadium.
He hit 30 home runs in Old Busch Stadium in a year. The year before, he hit 15 in six games here. That's what I'm talking about. He was incredible when he came here with the Dodgers. I exaggerate a little bit.
I think you are. I think his Dodger days were more of his prime, so there's some truth to that. But I think he played well in St. Louis.
Tino Martinez is one, though.
Oh, for sure. Remember? Love it. Oh, God.
But you know what might be a more interesting question? And because we are so Cardinal crazy fans here, and we are the best fans, I'm never ashamed to say that. We are. Forget it, everybody else. St. Louis got the best fans, baseball fans.
All right.
A more interesting question, I think, would be most beloved Cardinals. And I say that because that's not always going to be the guy who is the best Cardinal. I mean, you got your Willie McGee's. You got guys out there that are just beloved, but not necessarily the best, even though Willie was close to that.
Well, Bo Hart fits that category, right?
Well, yeah. I mean,
your Rex Hudler.
Joe McEwing.
Hart,
for sure.
Scott Spezio. All those. That would be the thing.
We will embrace that player here for sure. No doubt.
Yeah.
Just like the Blues love their enforcers and their two-way players that play hard, the Blues fan, Cardinal fan will love that guy that gives every ounce of effort he has and helps this team, even if they're not an all-star.
Jose Oquendo's on that one right there.
Exactly.
I'm going to give you one because we got to fill this fourth one out. I don't know if Roland's the guy, but did Will Clark change fans' perspective here that season he come in here?
Yes.
He did, so you can't put him on there. Because it was like nine games.
I love the exaggerations we do here, but it was like nine games in a row I think he got a game-winning hit. It was crazy. It was almost
and
every
time cool
he turned
too.
On.
Yeah. And he was cool, too.
He was very cool.
I tell you what, we're gonna come back to this because I think we got a good three here, and maybe it is three. Maybe that has something to say about our franchise, which is nothing wrong with that. By the end of the show, if we can't come up with a fourth, we'll just go with three, and we'll see what happens. But we need to take a quick break. We're going to let our guys here at lineupmedia.fm, which is a great podcast network that we're so proud to be a part of, that puts out tremendous podcasts each and every week. We're going to let them tell you a little bit about a couple of the great shows that are going on. And then when we come back, we have a special guest coming in for our This Week in Cardinal History segment. You're not going to want to miss it. Stay tuned. We'll see you on the other side.
Hey, everybody. This is Matt Geiger from the You're on the Clock podcast. And if you love football the way I do, but hate hearing about the off-the-field drama that ESPN reports every day, then you need to go to ontheclockpodcast.com as part of Lineup Media Group. We give you the best football content every week, and we don't talk about any off-field drama. And we also do a DraftKings contest weekly where the top two players get to take home some money. So that's, once again, ontheclockpodcast.com. Come check us out and let us know what you think.
Hey, this is Darren Pang, alongside my partner Kelly Chase here on Chasing Pucks with Panger. This is our NHL podcast, and it's on nhlpodcast.com, and it's damn good. It's really good. So you got to listen up. Make sure you download us. Make sure you figure it out. Anything you want to know about the NHL, stories, we got lots of stories. Chaser, do we have lots of stories?
We got stories, folks. Title in, you're going to love it. Buckle up.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the second half of Two Birds on a Bat, your Cardinals fans podcast. When we left for break, we were working on our list as we were trying to find a fourth player to join our group of most hated Cardinals of all time. I think we got a good list, guys. We got J.D. Drew, Colby Rasmus, and Tino Martinez. We're going to come up with that fourth one. But while we're thinking about that, we want to go ahead and do our This Week in Cardinals Baseball History. I think for especially those got reminded of it if you were watching the Cardinal game last night. We just had a great moment. It needs no introduction. September 8th, 1998, the chase for Roger Maris and what Mark McGwire was doing in St. Louis at the time, I remember as a fan, was amazing. It seemed like as he went on this tear, the whole world kept watching, and he just kept hitting home runs, and you kept waiting for him to go in a slump, but the guy just kept doing it and kept doing it. The studio is located here in Edwardsville, Illinois, and as I've become part of the community here, I attend a lot of fundraisers, and it seems like no matter which trivia night I go to, whenever you get to the sports category, there is always a trivia question, and it always says, on September 8th, 1998, Mark McGwire hit his 62nd home run. Two Cardinals made their major league debuts that evening. J.D. Drew was one of them. Who was the second? And if you live in Edwardsville and you don't know the answer to this question, it's time to move away. That gentleman was from Edwardsville, and his name was Mark Little. Had to be an unbelievable event for him. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Chrome. I appreciate it, buddy.
Hey, I got your buddy Steve-O here, your state champion teammate here. For those of you that don't know, Mark and Steve-O were teammates at Edwardsville, and they won a state championship together. So that's an obvious connection for us, and it's a good one.
Yeah, that was a previous life ago, wasn't it, Mark?
Yeah, it seems like it. You sound like you're the same kid. I'll tell you what, though, you are the best auctioneer in the St. Louis, Metroplex. So if anybody's looking for a good auctioneer, I have attended a couple auctions, and Steve ran it. Does a wonderful job. And that's probably a little known fact. It's also a little known fact that Mark Little's major league debut was not on September the 8th. And whoever has probably won, there's probably going to be a lot of controversy, but my day was actually September the 9th.
Well, you were called up that day, I think, is what we're looking for, right?
Well, I was called up, but I wasn't active, so I wasn't on the active roster.
Oh, you weren't? Okay, that's interesting.
No, because I had pulled my hamstring playing. We had a big playoff race going in Memphis, and I was actually playing against my old team, and I hit a ball off the pitcher, and I was running to first base and pulled my hamstring. And I'd had a bad hamstring all year, but, you know, heat of the moment, like, I got to beat this out. I ended up pulling my hamstring. Probably the worst I ever pulled it in my life. And the only reason why I got put on the active roster on the 9th when we were in Cincinnati was because Barry Weinberg was supposed to come out and, like, put me through a workout. And I can't think of the other trainer's name, but it was kind of the rehab guy who actually ended up going to the Cubs, ironically enough. He was supposed to go out there and do it, and they had their wires crossed, and so they asked me how it felt, and I said it felt great, and it was like, okay, well, we'll activate you. So, and I was really still hurt, but I wanted to be activated really bad.
Well, I don't blame you there. I think anybody would. I know if they'd come up to me, I'd have said, hey, I feel 110%. Put me in, coach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
But it was that's an amazing time for you, obviously, getting called up to the Cardinals. You're from the area. Obviously, you're working on your own career. I think the whole world knew what was going on with Mac. I mean, were you following this? I mean, did you have an understanding? Did it really sink in with you what was really going on here for you and the way this thing was going?
Well, yeah, like I said, you grew up a Cardinals fan, and that was such a neat year because, I got to play with my, boyhood idol in Willie McGee and, got to tell him that, which is, even a better story. But, that trade with Fernando Tatis and Darren Oliver, it happened earlier in the year, and there was a player to be named later. And so there was a lot of speculation, not by me, but by other people, in Edwardsville, in St. Louis, that I was going to be the guy to be named. And so I think at that point is when you couldn't miss, him being on the news. It was kind of like Tiger Woods in 2000. It's like, if you didn't know who Tiger Woods was, you were living in a hole in the ground. So you couldn't help but follow it being in the clubhouse, ESPN's on all the time. So it was just kind of pretty ironic that, my first game, first day up, wasn't my first day active, but my first day up, got to be in St. Louis, and it was a 25-minute car ride for my family to come across, and it was special in and of itself.
Now, you were in uniform that night, right, Mark?
That is correct, and I actually went back when you guys called, and I was like, September the 9th, when you said day in history, and I was like, Oh, they're calling me because that was the first day that, you know, I was actually in the big leagues. And then I was thinking, okay, well, McGuire hit his home run on the 8th. And so I was looking at a video, and so you watch the video, and, you know, Terry Lynn, who, you know, if there's anybody from Edwardsville watching, they probably know Terry Lynn, but his son Adam and I and Steve, I mean, we used to go to Pizza Hut every day for lunch and in high school. But he said, you know, I was like Forrest Gump, because it was like everywhere you kind of turned around, you'd see like Little and 58. And, you know, so I went back and watched a lot of that video, and, you know, it's kind of like, I think there's one scene where I'm trying to give McGuire a high five and he snubs me and just leaves me hanging, and, you know, a lot of little things like that. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a neat time to be up.
Hey, Mark, this is Fish, and we're here kind of to talk about your debut there and Mark McGuire's run at Maris's record. But what I think is most interesting is, now I'm a guy who could not hit 300 in Little League, but to think that you're in this spot, you got a hamstring injury, the worst he's ever had, he's got the trainers out there, and they ask you, how do you feel? Man, how can you not say, yeah, I feel great? You know, knowing, as you had said, that I really didn't feel that good, but could anybody be in that situation? We're not talking about a 12-year veteran here that can come back when he's ready to come. I'm talking about a kid's first opportunity to be hometown Cardinal. How could you not say, yeah, I'm ready to go? I find that interesting.
Well, no, but, I mean, it's when you are when you have to go out on a field and, you know, a trainer is pushing against your chest and you have to sprint as hard as you can against them. And, you know, if you haven't had a hamstring injury, you know, you don't know. But, I mean, the pain of that, soft tissue injuries hurt a lot worse than, like, breaking a bone. And the pain that I was going through, like, on the previous day, you know, the day McGuire hit 62, just to go through the workout. I mean, they were putting me through the ringer because they're going to activate me and put me on, you know, on an active roster as an injured player with, you know, I mean, the way the rules are set up, it kind of, once you get on that roster, you know, you're in a pretty good position. And so, you know, it was pretty important that I was healthy and could, you know, play 100%. Fortunately for me, once I got activated, I didn't actually play in a game until I got starting against Randy Johnson in the Astrodome, you know, probably a week later. So I still had time to heal. And, you know, Tony was protecting McGuire so much, he didn't make any changes in that lineup.
See, Mark,
here's another thing. You guys say J.D. Drew is, like, top three hated Cardinals of all time. He might be my number one. And I really think the world of J.D., and I know he got a bad shake in St. Louis, but I actually got my first hit in the big leagues because J.D. Drew couldn't play because he had a bad back. So I love J.D.
Hey, I think, Mark, that the time to say you are hurt is when you're about to make your debut against Randy Johnson. I think that's the time to say, hey, my leg hurts.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody ducked in.
Hey, Mark, it's funny because, you know, I followed your career a little bit. I just remember after, like, your first season there, you had something like 15 at-bats against Randy Johnson out of a total of 30 at-bats in that 98 season. I mean, it was a ridiculous amount, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was actually, well, I think I was 1-for-12 against him lifetime. So it felt like a lot more than that because, I mean, obviously to stand in the box and as ugly as he is, it kind of scars you anyway. And then the fact that I knew every pitch that was coming, actually faced him 13 times, and I went 1-for-12 against him in my career with a walk. So, yeah, I mean, it, you know, if I could have gotten hits off of Randy Johnson, I would have probably gotten more time in the big leagues. But I couldn't hit him.
That's an unfair shake kind of, though.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, that's a tough guy to hit.
Hey, hey, Mark, you told me a story a long time ago when we talked about this, and I just want you to reiterate it to our listeners out there. You said you were down in the Astrodome during this whole McGuire thing, and JD was out there, was hitting BP, and McGuire was hitting BP, and you just talk about the differences in the swing between the two and the distances the ball traveled, and I think you guys will find this interesting.
Yeah, and, you know, it was funny because I remember I was standing in the outfield. I think I was with Pat Kelly. It was either Pat Kelly or it was, David Howard. David Howard was and I got a funny story about David Howard if we have time. But I'm standing out there and, you know, Dave McKay is throwing BP and it's like Brian Jordan, Mark McGuire, J.D. Drew, and I'm trying to think who else was in their group. It might have been Ron Gant at the time. Just depends on how the lineup was that day. But, I mean, they're beating balls off of the back of the wall in the Astrodome. I mean, and it's just like every other pitch. I mean, back of the wall, back of the wall, back of the wall, which, I mean, it's obviously a lot harder to hit a home run to, you know, left field. But, you know, J.D. Drew would walk up there, and he's hitting balls into the upper deck in the Astrodome in center field. And it's just like he had just as much pop as those guys had. I mean, unbelievable. And, you know, it's kind of like hand and wrist strength and leverage. So, you know, I was actually listening to that cast from the eighth, and they were talking about the difference in guys swinging. I mean, you know, the difference is doing it on a consistent basis. But, I mean, from a pop standpoint, J.D. Drew had just as much pop as Mark McGwire.
Wow.
I'm sure people would argue that, but, you know,
hey,
what
you
I
there.
Saw in 19 games, you know, that's what I saw. I thought J.D. was going to be the next, you know, Mickey Mantle, and I think a lot of people did.
Well, that's a great point. I think he was. On that day, I want to talk about that day when you got called up, because obviously it was an interesting thing, and times have changed since that day. But so you get called up. I mean, was it a circus? I mean, it's your day. But yet this is going on. Was it just a flat-out circus?
Well, Steve probably knows this. We probably talked about this before. But, you know, we don't make the playoffs on September the 7th. And, you know, I get called in to Galen Pitt's office. He was, you know, used to be a first base coach for Torrey when Torrey was the manager. And then he was the AAA manager for the Redbirds. And he calls us in. He's like, look, we're going to call you up. You know, it's contingent upon you being able to pass a physical with your hamstring, but we got a favor to ask. And I'm like, okay. So this was my contingency. You know, I got called up because they asked me to give J.D. Drew a ride to St. Louis from Memphis, and they also needed a place for J.D. Drew to stay the night because there wasn't a hotel room in St. Louis. So you want to talk about what a madhouse St. Louis was. They couldn't get him a hotel room. And they said, can he stay with you? And I'm like, I don't have a house. I didn't have a house in Edwardsville at that time. My wife and I were getting married later on, you know, that fall. And we were going to stay at my in-laws. And so basically it was like, yeah, you know, he can stay with us at my in-laws. So he actually slept in my sister-in-law's bed and her twin bed at my in-laws' house. And that's how he hurt his back, because everybody that ever slept in my sister-in-law's bed, except for my sister-in-law, hurt their back. So that lends you a little bit of, you know, what the, you know, state of St. Louis was. I mean, it was crazy. The pass list was ridiculous. I think I put like 15 or 16 people on the pass list. I mean, it was just blank sheets of paper with people just scribbling in whatever. And, you know, the Cardinals accommodated everybody. So hats off to the Cardinals at that point.
Hey, the follow-up question to that is, how many people slept in your sister-in-law's bed?
And was she
well,
there?
I mean, yeah, exactly. Not in that aspect, Flowers. Get your head out of the gutter. But
you better leave,
you know,
that alone,
like,
Mark.
Every other kid or you know, somebody would stay the night, one of my brother-in-law's friends, she wasn't there, and they would hurt their back because her bed was so awful.
Hey, Mark, I'm going to bail you out here real quick, because this is
yes,
a question,
sir,
I've never been able to ask a big leaguer before. Everybody talks or thinks about when they're a little kid about pitching or hitting in the World Series and all that, but I swear that I think I've most often thought about what it was like that first day to walk out onto that field with all the other big leaguers and be able to look up in a place like St. Louis where they're going to draw 35, 40, 45,000 people.
Well, there were 300,000 people at that game.
Right, right. No, yeah, but I'm just saying in general,
right,
my
right,
thoughts
– right.
And I've never been able to ask a big leaguer this. What is that feeling like, if you can describe it? Maybe it's undescribable.
Man, I'll tell you what. that is like a loaded question for me, because I'm not going to give you the answer that probably you want to hear. But, you know, it was really awkward. It was an awkward moment for me because I had just gotten traded to that organization. And I had played against a lot of those guys that were, you know, on that field. I mean, Fernando Tatis was in the Rangers organization, and I knew Darren Oliver. I knew Luis Ordaz and Placido Polanco just from playing against them in the minor leagues. And I had played against Eli Marrero back in rookie ball in 1994. But other than that, oh, and Joe McEwing, I take it back. Joe McEwing, Rick Crowshore was another guy that was up at that time. I think Mike Busby, and I had played against all those guys, but I hadn't been a teammate with them except for, you know, the previous like 2 weeks when I was down in Memphis. So, you know, I was like, you know, it's really a weird feeling to get traded to a team, and you know, there's all these cliques, and you don't fit in anywhere, and it's pretty easy because there's this universal language of baseball, but. You know, it was, you know, awkward. I mean, it was like everybody ran out on the field, you know, when he hit that home run. And I was like in the dugout. And I remember looking at J.D. Drew, and we were like, well, I guess we need to go out.
Hey, you know, Mark, because I never played in the big leagues, but it can't be any more. I do have a sister-in-law, and it can't be any more awkward than talking about J.D. Drew sleeping in your sister-in-law's bed. That's got to be pretty awkward.
Exactly. But it was just weird. It was, you know, it was a much better feeling for me to, like, go to the Rockies in 2001 and make that team out of spring training and go to opening, you know, day and, you know, play against the Cardinals in Colorado. That was surreal. But that was like a, you know, a moment where you look up in the stands and it was like, you know, I earned this and I made it. And, you know, it wasn't just, I got called up because I had gotten traded to the Cardinals. You know, that was a great moment. And then, especially to, you know, kind of get let go the way I did with the Cardinals, and then the next year have opening day in St. Louis and get the game-winning hit off of Mike Timlin. Like, you know, to run around and almost get around first base and, you know, flip Tony La Russa off, that's what you want to do because it's like, yeah, you let me go and I just shoved it up your ass. I think I can say this is a podcast, right?
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Hey, that's the answer I was looking for, Mark, because I love that story. I love that answer. But let me ask you this. Was it easier hitting off Mike Timlin or Randy Johnson?
Oh, my God, Randy Johnson. Mike Timlin was filthy. I remember the first couple pitches he threw me, and I thought, man, I didn't see that ball. I never saw that, and I don't know how I got that hit off him, but I did. And, you know, one of those big moments. And let me tell you this story. Can I say the F word on this podcast, or do you want me to just imply that it's the F word?
We'll bleep it out if we need to, buddy.
Okay. So, anyway, so I'm up in the big leagues, right? This is what my experience was like, Fish. But I'm up in the big leagues. And David Howard took me under his wing. And I don't know if you know, or I said David Howard earlier, but I don't know if you remember him. He was a utility infielder. He had gotten traded over from the Royals, or he had signed as a free agent with from the Royals to the Cardinals, I think, in 98. I think that was his first year in 98. And he'd actually dove up the middle for a ball, and he blew his rotator cuff. And so when I show up, I don't know who David Howard is, but he ran fantasy golf. He ran fantasy football. He always carried a backpack with him. He kept all these, you know, the pool money and, you know, everything that's going on inside a big league clubhouse. He, like, was the ringleader. And it was because he was hurt. But usually that guy is a pitcher. And he's usually a starting pitcher because they got a ton of time on their hands. And so anyway, he's hurt his rotator cuff. So I'm like, okay, you know, he looks like a duck, sounds like a duck. It's probably a duck, right? So he takes me under his wing. The day McGuire hits 62, we get on a charter plane. We fly to Cincinnati. He's telling me this is where you can sit. This is where you can't sit. Grab a, you know, a garbage bag, fill it up with beer. Don't do this. Do this. Don't do that. So I end up sitting right next to him. And right behind us is, well, who was right behind us? Who was the catcher? Lampkin. Tom Lampkin, right?
Right.
And so he's sitting behind us, and then McGuire sat right behind him. So I'm kind of in this – I'm in a place where I shouldn't be. I should be – can't be in the back of the plane. I'm supposed to be right behind the media towards the front of the plane. That's where you're supposed to sit. And so anyway, he just takes me under his wing from that day on, and he's like, man, this is all, you know, this is awesome. You're going to get your first hit this year, and the big league's like, God, this is great. And you know, he's like saying all these things, and I'm thinking he wants me to ask him about his first hit in the big league. And interleague play had just started, and I knew if he came from Kansas City and he was a starting pitcher, which he wasn't, but I think he is, I'm like, well, oh, man, I don't know. And if he was a reliever, he probably hasn't had an at-bat in interleague play. I don't know if he's had an at-bat in the big leagues, let alone a hit, but I don't know what to say. So I say, do you have a hit in the big leagues? And he goes, do I have a hit in the big leagues? Are you kidding me? Do I have a hit in the big leagues? He's like, oh, my God. He's like, I hit a home run off of Nolan Ryan. I hit two home runs off of Nolan Ryan. do I have a hit in the big leagues? And he's just running around telling everybody, Dave Parker, Carney Lansford, Willie McGee, what I said or what I asked him. And so long story short, I get up and down 50 times during that game, never get into the game. After the game, full clubhouse, Tony La Russa comes off his press conference, walks right up to me, and he said, I'm going to get you a shirt on it that says IS. And I said, IS? I said, if, you know, like we called it in spring training, if you made a trip and didn't play, you were just in case, you know, you were jicking. And I said, like, jick, like for just in case? And he's like, no, IS for idiot, bleep, because you're an effing idiot. He's like, how in the hell could you think David Howard didn't have it hit in the big leagues? He's like, what do you think he was, 0 for 3,000? And I said, no, I didn't think he, you know, was 0 for 3,000. I thought he was a pitcher. And he's like, that's worse. You're an effing idiot. He was just wearing me out in front of everybody. So,
in a fun way, you know, or being a jerk?
Oh, big time. Big time a-hole. And, you know, the funny thing was, at the end of that, Willie McGee walked up to me and he said, hey, Mark, he goes, I didn't know who David Howard was, you know, before he got here. And he goes, I've been playing for 18 years. And I'm like, well, shit, Willie, you could have said something. You know, you could have stood up for me in some shape or form, but you didn't. And he was like, you know, that's, you're a rookie. So anyway, that's my Tony La Russa story. And it's funny because he's now a, you know, consultant with the Diamondbacks. And, you know, my best friend is Mike Bell, who's the farm director, and he sees him all the time. And he reminds him of that story constantly, and I don't think Tony even remembers saying it. So,
you know, you bring up that you have a best friend who's doing this. What are you doing now, Mark?
I do medical device sales.
Is there a reason why? I mean, I know you did some coaching. Is there a reason why you decided to get out of baseball? I'm sure there were some opportunities for you.
Yeah, so I coached for a year. I was a roving outfield and base running coordinator with the Brewers, and loved it. You know, I thought it was great and, you know, got to go around and meet a lot of kids and, you know, you kind of impart your wisdom on them and, you know, you work for 2 weeks, you're off for a week and, you know, but, you know, the money is not the greatest in the world. And it's one of those deals where it's like, you still don't, I mean, if I've only ever done baseball and I go into baseball at the end, right? It's like, that's it. Those are my tangible skills, right? I'm baseball. I got a PhD in baseball. Well, the way I look at it is like, if I do something else, if I get into sales, if I finish my degree and, you know, and I had already had my degree at that point. I finished it the last year I played, but I was like, I want something that nobody can take away from me. You know, it's, you know, if, you know, the Diamondbacks are having a bad season and, you know, the front office is upset and they want to make a managerial change, they make that. And that manager gets fired and everybody else gets fired too. And if it's that bad and they fire the GM and the scouting director and everybody else, everybody in player development gets fired. And it's like, you look at those cycles and that could be every 3 to 4 years. You know, you're out looking for another job and it's, you know, who owes you a favor? And I just said, you know what? I want something that is mine and nobody can take away from me. So I thought it'd be a lot of fun to go to the operating room. And, you know, we deal with a lot of orthopedic surgeons. I dealt with more than most because I was hurt a lot. But, you know, it's been a blast. It's been 10 years now. And, you know, I can't ask for anything else. I love what I do. And
so no thoughts ever getting back in that?
Into baseball?
Yeah, at some level doing something.
Well, I mean, I do stuff with my kids' team. So I'm like, I'll say I'm the head of baseball ops because I don't want to deal with parents. And, you know, I think that's when we were going to do our baseball thing back in the day. You know, Jim and Steve and, you know, Tim Funkhauser and I, but it was like, you know, I think we sat down and we discussed kind of what we wanted and what we expected out of it. And, you know, I think what we had decided was Tim and I would do baseball ops and Steve, you and Jim could, you know, take care of the parents. And, you know, because everybody thinks their kids are getting screwed at some level. So, you know, I give back to those kids and, you know, I don't charge anybody for my time and, you know, I enjoy that. And, you know, I think Mike Bell and I have a pact. It's kind of like, you know, if I ever have a high level, you know, sales executive position and he wants to get out of baseball, then I got his back. And if he's ever a, you know, big league GM and, you know, I want to get out of med device sales, he's got my back. So we're playing both sides of the fence and we'll see who gets to the top first.
Well, I tell you, it's been a great ride for you, I'd say you'd have to admit. And you lived the dream that every kid wants to live, and we all, you know, I don't know how many times everybody spends in the backyard getting a big league hit. And I think, like, when Fish asked you the question, I knew right where he was going. As a fan, we all want to know what that feels like. So to hear you describe that is you know, awesome for us, because I think we picture it sometimes a different way. Like, hearing you talk about that night when you came up, you know, I would sit there and think you had to be on cloud nine and you felt awkward. So, I mean, it's an interesting take from an interesting guy. I'm sure, you know, a few years ago, it was always an interesting topic that whenever the McGuire thing would come up, you could always just kind of sit back and think, I was there. I had one of the best seats in the house. And even though, even though you kind of felt a little bit like an outsider, to be a part of that had to be an amazing thing. But we can't thank you enough for being with us today. It was great for our fans and for us to hear from you and hear from a real big leaguer on some of the things that really went on behind the scenes. And of course, I enjoyed meeting you when you were here and getting to know. I wish it would have, you know, wish we could have became better friends, but you moved away. And obviously your friendship with Steve-O and the rest of these guys will continue on.
It's funny, Mark. Fish is sitting here feeling his leg, trying to find a hamstring on there. I think his motto in life is you can't pull fat. So
right.
That's right. I never had a hamstring problem in my life.
Yeah.
My dad was also not. My
dad was also fast enough to have that. And I think with a name like Fish, and you know, obviously I guess you could be some sort of amphibian, because I don't know, but. Yeah,
I'm big, fat, and ugly. That's exactly what I am.
It's going to be tough to pull your hammy, I got a feeling, Fish.
Right, you got it. Well, and also, my dad never thought that I was getting screwed. My dad would have been the first guy to say, man, my son's awful.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mark, can't thank you enough for being on the show. I know our fans are going to get a big kick out of listening to it. But, you know, in that age-old question of, you know, we talk about all the time here, and if you get the chance and listen to the show, when you hear the opening, I think you'll get goosebumps, because some of them are unbelievable moments in Cardinal history. You know, we get goosebumps because I think about where I was when some of these things happened. For you, you know, when one of the most important moments in Cardinal history and baseball history happened, you know right where you were, and that was in a dugout with a front row seat. So look forward to it. Or maybe we can get you back on as the playoffs come along and give us your thoughts on the Cardinals and where they're headed, if you get to follow them quite a bit. But maybe it'd be nice to catch back up with you.
Yeah, it sounds good. Anytime, guys.
Thank you, Mark. Love the stories.
Thanks, brother.
All right, Fish. See you, Steve.
That was Mark Little, a former Cardinal, Rocky, minor leaguer, big leaguer, Edwardsville native. Had a nice baseball career. I got to know him. I spent a few months getting to know him through Steve and some mutual friends when it came to youth baseball. And you guys that Fish, you don't know him, Steve Eisenman. Great guy, you know, fun. Not, you can tell by his stories that he's not gonna, you know, he's not here to give you a cliche answer.
Humble. I mean,
and just fun, but matter of fact with it, like, because you know what, that's kind of how he is. He's like, look, it is what it was. And But what a great perspective. You know, almost like what this show's about. I mean, we're just fans, right? We don't think we're any better than anybody else. He's kind of that way, is he not, Steve?
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the greatest guys you'll ever meet. I mean, growing up, childhood friends with him and you know, playing Little League against him and then going through the whole high school experience with him. I mean, just a stud. I mean, just he's one of those pure athletes that – you know, freshman year, starting quarterback for the freshman team, you know, starting center fielder for us, moved up to the varsity level, you know, played basketball point guard on the A team. I was on the B team. So, and when he tells me, what was the compliment he gave me on this one here? But
great auctioneer.
Great auctioneer.
He could probably do that too.
Oh, I'm sure he could. But the only other I mean, you know how guys are in high school, your friends, you know, you don't get a whole lot of compliments from them as you're going through things.
Right.
You know, you're always
sure.
Trying to tear each other down. And he gave me one other compliment in basketball, but we'll keep that to ourselves.
Hey,
but
I want to throw great in there real dude. Quick. I've never met the man, and I'm already sitting here thinking, wonder how I could get together with him sometime and listen to some more of those baseball stories.
Oh,
I love them.
So the perspective there, as we do and develop our show and everything, I mean, I guess there's three sides to baseball. There might be more, but from what he brings to the table talking to us, there's the on-field side.
Sure.
And there's the clubhouse side,
right.
And then there's the business side. And, you know, I think from a player's perspective, you know, college baseball like myself, I get the on-field and the clubhouse. Jim, when we coached, you know, I always talked about education by dugout, okay? And
right.
The moms hated it.
Sure.
Okay, when you sit there and you go, hey, you're railing on a kid, a 9-year-old or an 8-year-old, saying, hey, how can you take 2 cock shots and then swinging a ball over your head for strike 3? You know, that's education by locker room, and that's what he talked about with La Russa and McGee and Howard. But then the business side is where I don't have a whole lot of experience. So to hear the call-ups, the ramifications of it, how those moves are made and how he got to his debut in the bigs is because JD needed a place to stay.
What an amazing story. Is that not unreal?
Yeah. There's 300,000 people at that
game. He needs a ride.
Yeah.
I mean, now listen.
And he was able to share that. That's what I really like. You know, some guys would have never shared that because it got, you know, don't have the most positive spin.
Yeah.
Hey, I only got to come here because I gave a. I'm sitting over here thinking, hell, I got a house. I can let the guy stay if he's going to give me a shot.
I was going to say, he's sitting here talking about how he's got no place for him to stay. I hope it went like this. Hey, you got some place to stay? Yep. For sure. Not sitting here going, well, I don't really have a.
That's what I meant with the hamstring.
Sure. Absolutely.
How could you say no?
Right.
You got to say I'm healthy.
But it is interesting how he gave us a take on that of. You think it's that easy, but if they work you out, it's not, because you're not going to be able to do what you need to do
right.
to prove to them that you can play. You're right. Just great stuff. And he's an interesting cat. Like, you know, he's that guy, right? Like, if I listen to you and Funky and a lot of guys still start, you know, Pyle, his coach and everything, I mean, he's that guy, right? Like, he was your outfielder. He pitched a little bit. But you guys throw your guy to get to the state championship game, and you guys are a little podunk town going up north. He's that guy, went to coach and said, give me the ball. I mean, I'm going to go out and win you a game here. I know I'm not one of your top pitchers, but give me the ball. And he goes out and shuts him down, right?
Just a pure athlete. Yeah, shut him down. So, you know, I mean, that's who this cat is. I mean, he's that, and we talk about it, and, you know, all the podcasts. Big-time players make big-time plays and big-time games. And if you ever get a chance to watch it, I mean, he's a battler. He's pure athleticism. He's built like an athlete. He run, you know, walks like a duck, talks like a duck. This cat's a duck, and he is just flat out.
Hey, I'm built like a duck too. What's that mean?
Well,
yep.
Skinny leg, fat body,
the board to different things.
Yep.
But,
hey, we got
to
get him back on though, Jimmy.
No, I think
he was
so.
Interesting.
I think so because you know I would like to get his perspective on a lot of things. You know. I hate to say this, but it sounds to me like his time as a Cardinal wasn't all that rosy.
Well, he had some problems with the business side
of
the baseball
part. No, I get that.
Part.
No, I get that.
Right.
And I think we don't – I mean, obviously we don't think about it because we don't do it, right? But, you know, to just assume that everything's all rainbows and butterflies is crazy.
Right.
And he's an example of that. I mean, like he said, honest to goodness, his memory is making – and it should be – making a club on merit – out of spring training,
right.
You've really done something there, right?
Well, he talked about, you know, sticking it to La Russa, which goes back to our whole conversation
earlier.
Yeah,
not earlier. The Cardinals, La Russa.
La Russa.
Right.
So how much did La Russa, them not being the player that he wanted, whether it's a Roland or a Rasmus or whoever, did he chase him out? How much influence did he have on saying, I don't want this guy on my bench or in my clubhouse? And then does that get relayed to the player, or does it go through the agents, or how's it softened up? Where's the business
you
side?
You could
of
make
it?
An all-star team out of the people that La Russa ran off.
Yeah.
An absolute all-star team.
But we've talked about this, though. That's okay. He wanted his club here, and he built them. Now, he may have been wrong about Mark. Everything I know about Mark Little is he could have played for Tony no problem. Tony would have loved him, ran through a wall for him. I guarantee you, if he put Mark Little on the mound and said, I want this guy drilled in the ribs, Mark would have drilled him.
Without
pitcher
a doubt.
Or not pitcher. My point is, it only takes one little thing in life, knowing I don't know Tony La Russa, you don't know Tony La Russa, Fish, you don't know him, we know of him and how he acted. Would it not surprise you that La Russa wasn't a guy that the minute he heard that Howard story thought, I don't like this kid, I want him out of here? Would that surprise you?
No, you know, because he's a big baseball, you know, you got to know the game. You got to know the history of it.
And let me tell you something. Willie McGee could have looked right at Tony and said, I didn't know who he was. And that's one of the only battles Tony might have lost, was trying to go head-to-head with Willie McGee in St. Louis.
But did you hear the lineup when he was talking about guys that, you know, Dave Stewart, Eckersley, McGee, Carney Lansford? These are all the A's. You know, I thought, what are you doing out in Oakland?
Well, those are the guys.
I remember Timlin and him being filthy. I do remember that. Absolutely. Had great stuff, moved around. But to hear that story, and he was serious. You could tell it.
Well, was he serious? Wait a minute. No, I think Steve knows him. Hang on.
Hitting Timlin was tougher than trying to hit Johnson.
Was he saying, you know him better than any of us. Was he saying Timlin was nastier than Johnson because that was his hit?
No. What he was saying Timlin was nasty in his own way. You know, obviously, Randy Johnson being nasty is I'm coming to get you. You know, here's my pitches. You know what's coming. He alluded to that.
Look, I know it. Fastball.
And this is what it's going to do. And Timlin's stuff was just that might explode on you a little bit more than you expected, that might have had that late movement that you didn't expect. And that's what he was talking about when he goes, hey, there was times that I just didn't, you know, I looked at a pitch, I go, holy shit, what was that? I didn't even see that one. And some pitchers have that ability, but sometimes it's the approach to the at-bat and not knowing the guy. And I guarantee when you start studying film like these guys all do, and you go, okay, well, I know I'm going to be facing Randy Johnson. They get in there, they kind of see it, they know what to expect. Timlin was probably somebody he wasn't quite prepared for.
Isn't it amazing how big leagues work? You face a guy like that, a manager will get one of his better players a day of rest to not put him in a slump.
Remember when George Hendrick never faced the knuckleballers? Could have screwed him up for 3 weeks?
Well, we go back to that's and a manager's job, out. Right? Yeah, it's just George. Weird. I would love to know how many career, like, bench guys, call-up guys, the career they had against guys like a Randy Johnson. And the only reason I think of it is, I think you know my wife's cousin, he got called up twice to the big leagues. His first major league hit was against Randy Johnson. And I said, that had to be kind of a thrill. He goes, well, of course it was a thrill. He goes, but that's all I faced for those kind of guys because they would throw you in there and say, go get them.
Right. They were throwing
to
the wolves.
And you were happy to do it. Now, he only had 9 at-bats in the big leagues. But, you know, he can say, I got a hit off Randy Johnson. You know, it's a neat thing. So, for me, it was a great story. It was a great perspective from a former big leaguer that is always going to have that. And, again, I think one of the cool things about this show is, especially when we do the This Week in Cardinal History, and we appreciate your guys' thoughts on it because it has been a very well-received portion of the show, we think about, and I brought it up to Mark, you know, where were you when this happened? Like, I know where I was when all those moments happened that I can remember. And he will always remember where he was when McGuire broke Maris's record. So a pretty interesting thing.
Yeah, I got a photo of that night, obviously. I think everybody, any St. Louis Cardinal fan, I think, has a photo from some, you know, night or some point in time of number 62, right? Whether it's McGuire's swing, whether it's he's crossing home plate, hugging Sosa, hugging the Maris family, whatever it is. The one I have, and the way Mark described it was perfect, where him and JD were kind of sitting in the dugout like, well, shit, what do? I guess we go out there. It is right after that moment because everybody's crowded around, and you specifically see Little and Drew in the back of their jerseys. And, I mean, it is clear as day who these two cats are, and now knowing the story, it looks like they're outsiders looking in and not partaking in the whole celebration.
Well, they probably felt that way. I mean,
they did.
It's a tough situation to be thrown into there for Little and Drew.
Amazing. Now, just great stuff. But, you know, it's one of my favorite segments we do. Hopefully this Redbirds Club for this year, I know that we're all a little skeptical, but you never know. I mean, just when you count these guys out, they do some amazing things, and that's where some of these great moments in Cardinal history come from. And you never know when it's going to be. I mean, I thought, you know, Fish, you bring it up all the time. I thought the other night when Carpenter hit that home run and we hit two more in the ninth in Pittsburgh, I thought we're going to look back on that, and that's going to be our Yadier in New York moment. That's going to be our Pendleton in New York moment.
Well, we may yet.
Yeah, we may yet. It may happen yet, so we'll see. But last night, rough road. But you know what's great about baseball? It's a new day.
Yep. It's always tomorrow.
Hey, well, I was going to say the sun comes up the next day, but it's been raining all morning, so I don't know if Mudville here's in trouble. Mighty Casey might have struck out on us. But if they did, it doesn't matter. We'll all be Cardinal fans, and we'll all continue to support them. And can't thank you guys enough for listening to the show. We hope you enjoyed it this week. When we come back next week, hopefully we're going to talk about the Cardinals taking care of business against the Milwaukee Brewers this weekend. Although I know they're a big league club, it is a team that we got to take advantage of this weekend. The New York Mets are in Atlanta, You know, they got a road pay for them. San Francisco's playing Arizona. All three teams fighting for this last wild card, or these two wild card spots, are playing sub 500 teams. Got to get our job done this weekend. Take care of business.
Absolutely.
Well, go Birds.
All right. For Jimbo, for Fish, and Steve-O, we will see you next week. Thanks for sticking with us. We know we went a little long this week, but we had the opportunity to keep Mark on, and it was good stuff. So from Two Birds and a Bat, we will see you Monday.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.